Hey, it's us, Golf Guys, Brent Gunning and Sam McKee. We're back, and I know it's a major week, but really, I just had to drag Sammy back to the mic to bask in the afterglow of a Rory win. Sammy, always fun to chop it up with you. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing really well. It's funny because I texted you mid-back nine yesterday of Xander and Rory in their match play tournament there that turned into an absolute beatdown, and it's hilarious because I was like, hey, Gunner, maybe we should do a golf show tomorrow. What do you think? And you're like, yes, immediate yes. Like, it was, honestly, I don't think you've replied to one of my texts quicker than you texted, replied to that text yesterday. So, good for you. We're back. And, yeah, you get to bask in what was a wonderful performance for Rory at the Wells Fargo.
Yeah, I mean, couldn't have come at a better time. I know we got the major this week, and we'll tee that up. It's fittingly that he wins a bunch at the at Quail Hollow, where they have the Wells Fargo every year. They're going to go to Valhalla, where he's won again. And yeah, that was just a very classic Rory performance, where he just makes it look easy. It's also a classic Rory performance that he invites some danger, dunking it in the drink on 18 when it was wholly secured there. This is the tantalizing thing. Like, that's the performance that makes me get my hopes up every single time a major rolls around, because you know it's in there for him. And, you know, I know it feels like every week is Scottie Scheffler's week, but if Rory's going to play like that, I think he's going to be right there with him.
Yeah, that's as strong a performance as you're ever going to see from a golfer in an elevated event. Good field, playing against one of his, better peers, and he just made him look silly. Like, we all know the story of Xander, and we all know, I like to call Rory a choker and like to make fun of him. But I do think that there's a very different class when it comes to those two guys. Like, Xander's a very good golfer, and he has won on tour, and he's won lots of money, and he's been in the at East Lake of the Tours Championship all these years. And I get it. I know that he's good. But there's just no comparison between those two guys' best, in my opinion. And Rory's best is better than anybody. And you saw his best yesterday. The only thing is, like, it's not winning the Texas Valero Open, where no one wins the Texas Valero Open and then goes to Augusta and wins that the next week. So maybe it's not that. But winning 2 weeks in a row on the PGA Tour is really hard to do, let alone an elevated event into one of the majors. So maybe as a Rory fan, you actually wanted him to lose that, Gunner, instead of actually winning it. Because winning twice in a row on tour, especially with the likes of Scottie Scheffler, new father, coming back refreshed, ready to rock. Yeah, maybe you wanted him to lose that one and maybe be the bigger choker in the battle of the chokers on Sunday.
Yeah, I think I'll take the wins wherever they come, especially in an elevated event. You certainly want to have that one. He'll certainly take it with the $3.6 million that he puts in his jeans there.
God, he's so rich.
He's so, so rich, both, you know, like personally and in terms of, you know, like actual wealth in his bank account. Yeah, like he needs it there. But it is funny that it's Schauffele, because that's vintage Rory in terms of just icing it. You got a little bit of a lead, and then once it flips, you just don't ever let the guy look back. But God, Schauffele. So there's a moment Rory picks up a bird to go three up. Schauffele needs a par putt. I think this was on 12 to sink to keep it at three. And then he drops the stroke there. It goes to four. And not that it was ever close when it was at three, but that was the kiss of death. And we've just seen that from Schauffele so many times. There's never been, for all the greats in this game that I'm positive of what they're going to do, there's never been a guy who I'm more certain that if he's in the mix, he's going to find a way not to be soon. It's remarkable how often Schauffele doesn't come through.
And even his wins, right?
Yep.
He's out of it. He's out of it, and there's like it's the perfect recipe for a guy who has a hard time closing to win, where he's multiple strokes back, and there's no pressure on him, and no one's thinking about him, and he gets super hot and he wins. That's the recipe for him to win, and we've seen it multiple times already this year. Think about the Players. He should have won that tournament four times, Gunner. He was in control of it, and he just couldn't cash in, making bad bogeys. I believe he bogeyed the 16th, the par five, that everyone either pars or birdies there. He just really had a tough stretch there, and it kind of translates. And much like lots of parts of golf, when you expect something bad to start happening, it often does. And he's getting into this spot here. Xander Schauffele's kind of like the Leafs. Like, he gets into these situations where they should be winning, And he only has bad things to look back on, and it doesn't work out. Like, it really feels like he has built up this shield of losing here that no matter what happens to him, it's going to go bad.
You're right.
Is it too far?
No, you're so right, because I had the comp in my head. I wondered, I'm like, is Xander Schauffele the Leafs? Is that what's happening here? But then I realized, at least I certainly hope this person doesn't exist out there. There's no Xander Schauffele media person in golf who's like, oh, but the posts, oh, but the refs, he can never get a ruling. Like, at least the Leafs have rubes such as myself to ride for them. Yeah. No, come hell or high water.
Not as many fans. Maybe Xander's the Carolina Hurricanes of of the PGA Tour, where their failures are much like very similar to the Leafs, or just later in the playoffs, yeah. And they fly way further under the radar, but no one cares as much as they do with Rory, who was actually the Leafs. So we found a way to bring the Leafs into this, but yeah, Xander Schauffele, the Carolina Hurricanes of golf, is not as I expected to say today.
God, oh, who was it that I referred to as a world championship hockey player of, oh, that was Denny McCarthy when we were doing the last one of these. So our extremely niche golf to hockey metaphors stay alive here. All right, so Rory picks up a win. You mentioned it there. Do I want him to get the win? Does Rory want to get the win heading into Quail Hollow? Leaving Quail Hollow, heading into Valhalla. Well, let's just do it here. This is a stat you're going to hear a billion times if you haven't already. The last time Rory McIlroy won a major, it was held at Valhalla. It was the PGA Championship. He was the number two ranked golfer in the world, and he had won his last two starts. Rory McIlroy just won his last two starts as the number two ranked golfer in the world heading into the PGA Championship at Valhalla. If that was ever a kiss of death, you know, I'd love to sit here and say, like, oh, look at the serendipity. It doesn't work that way. If Rory really is the Leafs, there's no way it works out that well.
Well, I was going to say, like, you're not banking on this for the fact, because like we always hear these kind of stats and they never come true. Like, I feel like we've had these kind of things over the years and it just never comes through. But to me, it's a very obvious thing, and where the improvement has been in his game, just feels like he's putting so much better. And yesterday, I mean, he was pouring in everything. And of course, I think maybe the big swing moment in that round yesterday was the eagle putt that he jars right in Xander's eye. He went up two at that time. Xander ends up birdieing to go back to one, but it felt like that was the real turning point. But the putting has really, really improved for him, and he looks a lot more confident. And anyone who plays, you know, professional, pro, amateur, crappy golfer, if you see it go in a little bit, you start to feel like you're the best putter in the world. And Rory McIlroy with a hot putter is an extremely dangerous guy. So I think there's one club in Rory's bag, maybe outside of a wedge, that you want to see really hot heading into a major championship, it's absolutely the putter. Because we all know what he does with the other ones. With the longer clubs, he's doing well. Like the driver.
Yeah.
The driving yesterday, and I know he hit a couple left, a couple right here and there, but for the week, I don't even know what his strokes gained off the tee were. Like, it would have been an obscene
all
number.
Them.
Yeah, just like number one. I haven't looked. I can guarantee number one. The way he's hitting the driver, like, he is in the perfect form you want him heading into a major, which sets up the ultimate heartbreak for every Rory fan out there.
Yeah, it does. I mean, he is the second betting favorite heading into this because even that performance from Rory McIlroy cannot beat God. So Scottie Scheffler is still atop the pecking order in the betting favorites there. But yeah, we've seen a million times, if the putter gets even just a little bit hot with him, he's capable of this. And then it's the old DJ recipe. You know, the game is different than it was when Dustin Johnson was doing it, but he's going to drive it the best. And if he can hit a wedge remotely close and make a few putts, it's right there in front of him. And that's why it's always so frustrating with Rory, is that, you know, unlike with Scheffler, it doesn't seem like it should be this easy for him. With Rory, you wonder how it's ever this hard. They're kind of the exact opposite in that regard. And yeah, we've been through this a million times. You've seen it before. And, you know, I was of the opinion, like, Rory heading into Augusta, it was a guy who was kind of flying under the radar as much as possible for him. And, you know, I'm not going to say it's a bad thing that he's showing such good form, winning both of these events, but, you know, any chance, and, you know, there was very little chance. He's Rory McIlroy. It's at Valhalla where he won his last one. He was going to be a massive talking point, but it feels like he is right back into the eye of of the storm with this thing after the win, and I don't know that that's a good thing for him.
No, you're right. You're right. He is the number one. Everyone's talking about him. All the golf media members are lining up at the pews in the Church of Rory. They're getting ready to testify. It's going to be a Rory coronation week. Like, everybody's on top of it for sure. So, like, I mean, that could go, if he wins, the Rory-gasm that the media and the golf world's about to have will be out of control. And if he doesn't, you know, it'll just be a classic sort of, you know, Rory weekend at a major. But I'm really looking forward to it. And the Valhalla, having him won there, like, this is,
yeah,
it's a Rory weekend. We can all agree that, you know, most majors are, but this one, more than ever, is going to be a big-time Rory weekend at the PGA Championship.
Yep, there's no other way to look at it. And man, like, I know you're going to say, and rightfully so, a lot of these are backdoor, but of his last 9 majors, 7 of them, he's finished in the top 10. Last year at the PGA Championship, it was 3 straight non-remarkable 69s that had him limping into the top 10. He wasn't in the top 10 at any point until Sunday. But yeah, I mean, the guy has been, again, whether it's truly in the mix or fake at the end of the mix, 7 of last 9 majors finish in the top 10. Like, I'm confident he will be part of the story this weekend. Will it be a happy one? Will it be a sad one? I don't know. But I don't think it's going to be a Rory out of the mix all weekend long. I think he's going to be there. And if it ends in heartbreak, it'll be because it feels like it was close. I don't know. That's my kind of read on him.
Yeah, that's fair. That's totally fair to me. Hey, I got a question for you.
Yes.
So
yes.
I see I follow all the golf media on X.
I
watch the golf channel. I have the golf channel on my personal TV at my desk when I'm working every day. It's just them talking all the time. A lot of Brandel Chambly, a lot of my boy Rex Hoggard.
Let me get in on this, that I also have the golf channel on while I do 3 hours of morning show.
Yeah.
So a lot of former Keith Pelley's tour, on my TV.
What's happening with Rory and Cantlay? Can you explain it to me like I'm 12? Because they're okay. Not explaining it to me like I'm 12. Having a hard time. Can you please explain it to me?
Okay, this is a must-have, and I want to be clear, this isn't journalism, what I'm about to do, but I am I loathe when there's a story in the world, and I'm like, you know what, I don't want to pay attention to that one. And then 2 days go by, and I do want to pay attention, but it feels like I've missed it. We need these, like, hey, explainers from the beginning, so we're going to try to do that here. Let me take you all the way back to wherever it was they played the last Ryder Cup. I've already forgot, but you may recall a hat gate happening.
I do.
Of Tiger's former man, Joe LaCava, waving his hat, and Rory was all hot.
Yep.
And then they all apologized. Like, somehow the most golf thing happened where they were all in the wrong and they all took full responsibility.
God, but that was a hot Ryder Cup moment.
That was hot.
Yeah.
And Joe LaCava caddying for Patrick Cantlay. So I don't know that the two things are tied. But in this history class, I'm going to throw it in there because we can't say that it's not. So Patrick Cantlay and Rory have both been members of the PGA Tour's policy board. This is a player-led board. They both are on it, and these are how they decide things like the schedule, how the board or how the tour is going to move forward, especially in this era. It's been a pretty important thing to be a part of. Well, Rory stepped down because he wanted to focus on golf. This will shock you. He got a little tired of giving State of the Nations every 3 days and then finding out what was happening the second before he had to take a mic and not actually being primed on any
of
this.
So I remember all of this to this point.
Yeah, you remember all that.
I'm standing, we're lockstep.
Okay. So he steps down, and this is, Rory wants to be quiet. Now, Webb Simpson is on the PGA Tour policy board.
God.
And
just
this
the
is
dorkiest board of all time.
The dorkiest board. Oh my God. I can give you some insight on James Hahn complaining about the practices and procedures. It's just very dorky. So Webb Simpson is on this board. Now, Webb Simpson has also got a lot of sponsors invites this year, and some people have been drawing a line there of like, Now, I could also draw a line that Webb Simpson's won a major, and say what you will, but it's a name that people recognize. So I actually don't think it's that crazy that he's getting all these sponsors exemptions, but people are making cases for young up-and-comers or guys who could maybe use it more, and I can hear that argument as well. Webb is kind of tired of the smoke, so he says, you know what, I just want to step down from this thing. If you guys think I'm getting sponsors exemptions just because of this, let me step down. Rory wants to take Webb's place. This is where the squawking about, well, did we have a vote? Who is Rory McIlroy to just get to decide? Which, you know, my opinion on that. He's Rory McIlroy. If he wants to be on the board, he should probably be on it.
I mean, but even me, the biggest of Rory haters, cannot quibble with that logic. I think you should probably be on the board.
So this now leads us to the two factions of the board. There is the Patrick Cantlay-led faction, which I believe Jordan Spieth is also a part of, that says, hey, I understood the idea to get a deal with the PIF, but now we have this money coming in from, you know, like the Fenway Sports Group and basically all the rich guys of the Americas who have done this $3 billion equity deal with the PGA Tour. So Cantlay, Spieth, their side of things says, why don't we just stick with that and we'll park a deal with LIV or PIF. For now, those guys can languish, and if it comes together, it comes together, but we're happy with the tour as is. And funnily enough, it is Rory McIlroy on the other side saying, I actually think this is bad for the game of golf. Rory's thing that he is trying to bring into this is he says, if we're going to change the way this is, let's have a true global tour. Let's have the Australian Open be a part of this. And you know what he wants. He wants the Irish Open to get elevated event status. That's his big bugaboo that he wants out of this. Mm-hmm. And he is on the other side of this issue. Cantlay, Spieth, they say, forget Ireland. Forget Australia. I want to play my golf in America. And that seems to be the crux of it. So as of right now, Rory said, fine, you know what? You don't want me. I'll just go away and leave. But we know Rory. He's not going to be able to leave well enough alone. And they're not going to be able to stop from dragging him into this. So did that answer questions?
Very well done, Gunnar. That was comprehensive explanation. And what it comes down to for me, it's golf. It's the most golfy quibble I've ever heard. But I actually you know, I think a lot of people on the outside seeing Rory fighting for the PIF side of it will be like, that's hypocritical, it's hypocritical. And part of it is, clearly, you know, he was number one against the tour, against the LIV tour and all that stuff. But I think we can all agree that that has iced to, the heat on that is gone. And he just wants to kind of have it be, I would love it that if all the sort of international opens were elevated events. That would be great.
Oh my God.
To have the Canadian Open be like that, to have the Australian, the Irish, all these tournaments, that it would be great. And I get what he's doing, but there is a side of me that's like, oh, it's very hypocritical for him to be like fighting for PIF, like after all of this. But even I can't really get there. I truly can't. Like, I want to so bad with all this stuff, but even I'm tired of fighting the fight. Like, I just, I want whatever makes it normal-ish again. Like, I think at some point where all these guys are able just to play on the same tour and pick and choose, that was sort of my original thought of what was going to happen. And whatever gets us closest to that is what I want. So there.
Yeah, it's so funny that you and I are just destined to never totally agree on this. Because I am sitting there going like, God, Rory, that's pretty hypocritical. You can't do that. Like, that is my first blush reaction. But if you give me my druthers, like if you told me, hey, Brent, professional golf had never existed. You get to decide. I want the four majors, and then I would love an elevated event that's the span. And it could be rotating. It doesn't have to be every year the same ones. Yep. But put the Spanish Open, the Irish Open, the Australian Open, our beloved RBC, Canadian Open. Throw them all in a basket or whatever, and it's much like the Open has rota courses. Why can't we have two or three elevated events a year that are designated as national opens? And it's Ireland 1 year, it's Australia 1 year, it's Canada 1 year, it's Spain, Italy, go down the list. Yep. And then this just allows you to kind of highlight other great golfing nations. Like, that seems like it'd be perfect. But I also, good luck convincing all these, again, America, good luck convincing them that they got to go trotting around the world. They're good to go to the UK. They play the Scottish Open. They play the Open, and then they come home. And that is about it. We have a hard enough time dragging them north of Detroit for the for the RBC Canadian Open. So the idea that these guys in the middle of June are going to Spain or anything like that, I wish it. I would love it. Mm-hmm. It's just so hard to envision that ever happening.
Well done, Gunnar. Thanks for the explanation. Do you want to talk about... go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'm happy I was able to do that because I actually wrote down some notes, but it was glitching for me, so that was all straight off the
bat. My man was spitting off the top of his head. Off the dome, if they will.
Off the dome.
So, do you want to talk about the PGA Championship?
Yeah, just I think it's exciting. Like, back at Valhalla, obviously I love that major because it was the last time Rory won one, but we're going to see all the clips going around. Him and Phil, I'm sure you remember this, but him and Phil getting into it at dark as they were trying to finish, and Phil was trying to kind of slow play things, and this was just young Rory full bucking and said, no, I'm going to go. I'm going to hit it down your throat, Phil Mickelson, because I'm winning this championship, and it's going to look awesome when the cameras are flickering in the dark. It's not quite Tiger at Firestone, but man, it was a pretty awesome finish. So honestly, I'm just excited. Valhalla, good old school venue. Haven't been back there in forever, it feels like. And that was one of the more electric major finishes of the last, I don't know, decade and a half here, and getting to relive it a bunch. You know, obviously my mileage goes a little farther than most on it. I can't wait, honestly.
Yeah, no, I mean, I always love major championship golf, but I always love them at these sort of classic venues. And my biggest Valhalla PGA Championship thought is Tiger versus Bob May. And my favorite Tiger Woods, and probably the most preposterous Tiger Woods clip of all time, is him in that playoff running the putt in. Like, we all know what Tiger is like. And, like, we all know that, like, he was always the most fired up and the biggest fist bumps. But even my sensibilities, I was like, holy crap, Tiger. Like, that was – I remember watching that as a kid being like, oh, my God, no, he didn't do that. It was the most amazing thing. That was, like, peak Tiger 2000 walking it in. And it's like, you look at a picture of Bob May. It's like, of course he beat Bob May. Like, how was he even involved with Bob May in this thing? Like, sorry, Bob May. I know he had a good career. But, like, yeah, I'm glad that Tiger got it. So you're right. Great classic venue. I think, was it the 2008 Ryder Cup was there? Like, it's, you know, it's a major venue. One of the really good classic ones. I'm ready to rock. I can't wait. I always love it over the long weekend. Family's always around, you know, get to watch it probably with my dad on Sunday. Like, I'm really looking forward to it. I love the long weekend major. I think of, there's been some good PGA championships. You think of Phil winning at Kiowa. Like, it's been a good one for the last little bit. So JT, I think, won one recently, the Southern Hills.
Yeah, that was when Mito Pereira threw up all over himself.
Yeah,
that
was exactly right. And, you know, it's going to be awesome. So looking forward to that part of it. And
go ahead. Quickly, you mentioned the 2000 PGA. So that is Tiger over Bob May.
Yeah.
That is also the, like, conspiracy theory of the lost ball from Tiger. Like, during that playoff, there's an errant drive, and it doesn't look like it should at all be in play. We are going to get some Zapruder film stuff from that. I imagine we're in for at least one spicy Brandel take regarding that. So we love a little controversy in the game. I don't know that they'll be able to work our man Johnson Wagner, like, hucking fastballs into the dirt like they did at the Players. That was still the most electric piece of golf television I've seen this year, but I don't know. Maybe we'll, or that would have been at the Masters. It would have been the Masters.
No, it wasn't the Masters. No,
it was the Players,
yeah,
I guess.
I think it was the Players. Yeah, it was the Players, because that was amazing. And he was just hammering the ball against it with the big old duster. He looked great.
Yes.
So the big question is Scottie Scheffler going to win?
It's hard to say no, but if even a child and having to sleep on that dad chair can't rein him in, then truly nothing can stop this man. The book I'm looking at has him at 4-1, which is absurd, but right? Like, you can't place the odds any higher than that, but it's just nuts. I do think we see a coming down to earth, even if that means a second place finish. Winning golf tournaments is so hard. To stay locked in for so long, it's been so hard. And for a guy who I think has done such a good job of compartmentalizing his life, of golf and life, how can that not have been throwing up a little bit right now? It also works the other way. We see it all the time in hockey. Guys score a goal for the kid all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't know how your life could not have been upended a little bit. And it seemed to me the thing he had best going for him, aside from being amazing at golf, was that he seemed to find the perfect balance there. And it seems like that had to have been thrown in flux with the kid and waiting and everything that's happened there.
I hear everything you say. And if you're ever going to get him, this feels like the one you're going to get him, right? Like, especially going into the US Open at the classic venue, Pinehurst, feels like he would just be, you know, back into regular form here. I mean, the last time he played was, I believe, the Heritage, which he won week after the Masters. So, I mean, just looking at his PGA Tour wins this year, you know, Arnold Palmer, Players Championship, Masters Tournament, RBC Heritage. It's like, wow, God. I will be wagering money on Scottie Scheffler to win this golf tournament. I think, you know, it might not be a runaway big-time win for him again, but just if you're going to be going into this golf tournament and you're a guy that likes to gamble on the PGA, on the big PGA tournaments, which I am one to do, I like to do that, I think you want to have some equity with Scottie Scheffler because you feel like you're going to be in it on Sunday. Like, regardless if he wins this baby or not, I don't think you're going to be looking at a situation where Scottie Scheffler misses the cut and is gone and he's not, like, part of this. Yeah. I feel like he will be a top five kind of guy. Maybe you look at him for the top five markets, a top 10 market. Maybe you want to do it that way. But to me, he will have a say in this, but I don't know if he's going to be able to push through again after, you know, like you said, been lying on that weird couch. He's been spending a lot of time probably sleeping weird. Him and his wife, new parents. If he can win this one, I mean, we're talking about heading into a rarefied air. So that, to me, is one of the reasons. It's just, you don't win two straight majors in four or five tournaments before, you know, before what month is it? It's before June. You're going to win five golf tournaments. It just doesn't happen unless he's, like, heading towards GOAT status. So I don't know.
The more we talk about it, I now think he's either going to win or miss the cut. Like, unless somebody just goes and runs away with this, if he is able to get back in the competitive mindset and it's a, you know, a 71-69 start or something like that, then I could see the switch just flipping and him going, oh, right, this thing I'm so good at. Like, it almost feels to me like it's a complete bomb out or he is right there with the top five. The top 25 finish almost seems harder to envision for me, but that's the thing about Scheffler.
So I'm looking down the odds here, and I am flabbergasted by some of these odds. I know I'm supposed to be, I guess, but I guess Rory 7-1 makes a ton of sense. He's red hot. I saw data, according to Data Golf, the most similar course to where he just won is is Valhalla. So, like, according to Data Golf, it's the most similar course. So that's very interesting.
Just
for all
another
those
reason why he should win.
So 7-1 makes sense for me to Rory. I think he's red hot, putting well. But the next favorite is 14-1 Brooks Koepka,
defending champ, baby.
I know, but still, like, I don't know how you can watch the Masters or just like any live stuff and see how he's doing. He's just not playing well. And 14-1 is crazy. I guess you can make me look stupid here and reach back, but like, I think it's a little bit different situation than like killer Brooks Koepka. Do you not?
I do think it's different, but I honestly think that is just as much telling of where the other big boys are at than it is of Koepka. Like, John Rahm, the book I'm looking at, has him at that exact same number. He's in the exact same spot, lost in the wilderness. He's John Rahm, and he could show up and play great golf for 4 days. I'm not doubting that at all, much like I don't think you're doubting it with Koepka, but it's just, it's so hard to see. But, you know, we did kind of go from a time where it felt like we had all these horses who at any given week, but I mean, Justin Thomas, like, he seems like he's been lost in the wilderness. Victor Hovland, he doesn't feel like he's ready for the breakthrough that he once had there. I mean, Morikawa, he's another guy getting relatively short odds. I don't feel about him the same way I did even 2 years ago. To me, the Koepka and Rahm and Schauffele also at that number, that to me is just so telling of where the rest of the big boys are in this sport right now, aside from Rory and Scheffler, honestly.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the LIV website as we speak here, and I don't quite know how to work
this. Homepage?
It's not your homepage? No, I don't know quite how to work this, but I think Brooks Koepka just won the tournament on LIV.
So, I thought he won the one prior to the Masters is what I thought.
Okay, but so I'm having a hard time figuring out how to work this website. So if you, so I'm looking at it here. It says May, Las, Jed, Han, Mia, Adelaide. So maybe I think he just won in Singapore potentially. So that's how far to the loop it is. Like I really am having a hard time figuring out the LIV Tour website. But I think he maybe have just won, so maybe he's going to make me look stupid and come in hot. But I didn't like what I saw from him at the Masters. It's a different animal going into one of these things. I know he won it last year, but it's just, he looked different to me at the Masters than he did last year. He just, I don't know, he had a different feel about him to me that, like, I don't know, maybe he's just enjoying himself on Liv and he just kind of realizes where his legacy's at or whatever. But going down the list of other names that interest me when I'm looking at the odds here, I don't think I'll get left behind on not having a DeChambeau bet. I don't think I'll bet him to win, but I think I'll get up maybe a top 10 or something just to have that because I love the way he looked at the Masters and I want to root for him again because I'm just...
Hey,
buddy, his TikTok game, his YouTube game, his Snapchat game, like I've said to you before, this guy does so much for the game of golf for like the Gen Z crowd where like he does all this stuff and he is a massive dork. And even me, the biggest Bryson fan, is cringing at some of the stuff he does. But it's good, and like he seems very happy, and he played great at the Masters. So I'm gonna have a little bit of scratch on him to be in the top 10 at least, because I like rooting for him, and I he's a guy I really do wish we got to see more.
I was at the front of the line to make fun of him for missing the cut at the Masters, and he made me look dumb. That was awesome having him back. I am actually fine getting him four, maybe five times a year if it's a Ryder Cup, President's Cup thing with him. I'm totally fine with that, but I love it when he's back in the mix, and I think it's so much better. Like you said, all that stuff, not for me. I think it's great that he does it. I'm going to throw you one other kind of long shotty, although, I don't know, he had a share of the lead after, what, the third round last year? Corey Connors, plus 8,000. He's a guy who had a top 10 just last week at Quail Hollow. He talked about how the two courses go hand in hand pretty well. I'm not telling you Corey Connors is going to win a major because that'd be crazy. You got a putt to do that. But I don't know, top 10, low Canadian. I like a lot of what you're seeing out of Corey Connors there. And just while we're there, shout out the Canadians.
Absolutely. Confirming, just went to Live Golf's X page, confirming that Brooks Koepka did win. He's the first player in Live history to have four wins, Gunner. So
coming in
hot. And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he should be the third favorite. But boy, I have a hard time picturing him being winning again. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I feel like an idiot now. I don't know. How do you feel about it?
No, I think Brooks Koepka, I think he is a new man every week. And by that, I mean he's old Brooksy every time I see him because it's a major. Yeah. I think you have to take the performance. Like, you should look at it. You should judge it. But don't do anything more with it than have a gander. Yeah. I think Brooks Koepka, we know what he is in majors. He's a different guy every time. I did want to get in the Canadians. Awesome week for them. They had a really, really nice week a couple weeks ago with Pendrith picking up his first win, but bunch of Canadians in the top 10. Pendrith and Connors, they both have a T10 there. Our man Mac Hughes with a T6 and what's basically a home game for him because he makes Charlotte his home there. So it's just awesome to see Pendrith get in the winner's circle, join the kind of club they've got going on there. I know Hughes had a big dinner for them all this week to kind of celebrate, and it's awesome, man. Like, we know it's all gearing up for President's Cup in Montreal, but we have to give love to Pendrith for joining the club and the rest of the Canadians for an awesome week at an elevated event.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I don't need to say anything, but that's a life changer for Pendrith. That's one that, you know, he's been playing on a lot of those alternate tour events across from the elevated events, and I don't know the exact exemptions that win gets you, but that changes your life big time. It gives you a lot of security, and to follow it up the following week and going into Wells Fargo and getting away. Did he finish top 10 or is it top 20?
Yep.
Yeah. So
he just edged out Connors, actually. So he was 10, Connors T13. Yeah.
Love it. So it's really nice to see. And honestly, to have this many incredible Canadian players on tour who can win any week is beyond my wildest dreams as a golf fan. And credit to Golf Canada. They've done an amazing job. So good on them. I'm just beyond impressed.
Yep. And hey, he was President's Cupper last time. You don't know how much that's spurning him. You don't know how much that helped him as well.
Boy, didn't McKee do too great in that, though. Oof.
No. Hey,
we didn't have a great performance of Canadian boys in that one. But they needed to take their lumps to set
that's
up
right.
The wonderful performance they're going to have at Royal Montreal in September. Mm.
Awesome weeks for the Canadians here. And yeah, it's going to be awesome to talk to our next guest. Really, really happy to talk with Tim McLaughlin, Golf Canada Chief Marketing Officer. Very, very happy to be joined by our guest today, Tim McLaughlin, Chief Marketing Officer with Golf Canada. Tim, thanks so much for jumping on. How you doing today?
Doing great. Great to be with you guys. Nice to see golf season's finally here, and the good weather's in this part of the country, and people are applying. So it's great time of year.
God, the golf season, it's teasing me. I feel like every day I think I'm about to hit that stretch of like consecutive 20 degree, nothing but sun and the rain and the clouds, they keep poking out. But that's okay, because that just means like I get the course to myself just that little bit more. So I'm okay with the bad weather, or the rougher weather, I should say. I don't mind it. You guys have got a great initiative going on. Just talking about the health benefits of the wonderful game of golf. Can you just talk to us a little bit about the initiative, Tim?
Yeah, thanks for helping us spread the word on this one. So we've just launched Golf, It's Good For You, which is a new campaign we've been working on for the last several months. And really the whole idea came out of just some research that we'd done to try and understand both golfers in Canada, but also just Canadians at large. And what became clear through that research is that only about 30% of active golfers really understand the role that golf can play in terms of physical and mental health, and only about 10% of non-golfers actually think that golf can be a positive contributor to those things. And there's actually a lot of sort of clinical and medical research that does speak to the direct connection there. Some research that we've seen indicates that golfers on average live 5 years longer than non-golfers, and it can also reduce the risk of about 40 chronic diseases. So this campaign is really all about using those insights to kind of juxtapose what you think you know about golf with what you might not know. And so what we're trying to do out there is really encourage people to learn more about the physical, mental, and then social benefits of the game, which all three of those things combine to really better the lives of Canadians if you're active in the sport.
So let me start with the physical then, Tim. And this is a million-dollar question, because I like to walk. I walk 18 holes when I play golf pretty much every time. Here and there, I'll take a cart. But a lot of my buds, they like to take carts. And, you know, it's a bit of a battle sometimes with some of them to get them into the walk. I mean, is the health benefit, you know, the huge part of it just the walking? Or is it, you know, the swinging the club? Like, if you're taking the cart, are you still feeling a lot of the same health benefits as you would be if you're walking 18 holes like myself and Gunnar usually do?
I mean, obviously, if you're not in a cart, you are going to have a bit more physical activity as part of the round. That said, like, you still end up walking quite a bit, even if you are taking a cart throughout a round. And so it's really the physical activity inherently that is sort of part of golf that contributes to that improved physical health. And so, you know, on any given round, you could be walking 10 to 18,000 steps depending. And so it is a really great way to get those steps in. And I think what also is so great about the sport of golf is that it's a sport that can be played for life from, you know, age six all the way up to age, you know, 100. And so, you know, it can be also adapted for people of all kinds of different disabilities. And so certainly you're going to get a little bit more physical activity if you're actually out on the course walking it. That said, it's still a really, even if you are riding in a cart, a great opportunity to get out there and stay active.
Yeah, and I would just like to offer a few words of wisdom for anybody listening to this. Is if it's cart path only and you're with guys who love to take a cart, maybe don't remind them about the health benefits as they have to walk clear across the fairway every single time. And just think, like, it's good for us to know, but you got to pick and choose your spots of when to remind people there. And you know, I don't know that this was, and this is super niche golf humor, and I'm sure I know my friend McKee will get it. I feel like I'll be speaking your language as well. Stanley Thompson must have known what he was doing when he was designing all these courses like 150 years ago, because every single one ends with me walking dead up a mountain to the
golf course
with the Widowmaker Hill that he... So I do think that it's like this is built into the like spine of the game in our country, is that, yeah, it's a good walk or ride. I love the point you bring up about how the sport allows people of all kind of ages to enjoy it together. I mean, you mentioned six. I got a three-year-old that loves to come in tow when I'm out there. You know, I've got my mom with me. I won't, you know, harm the innocent here, but let's just say above 50 years old for my mom there. Happy belated Mother's Day. It is a game that you can have generations of a family or friends, and I think that is one of the I won't say understated because we know it and we talk about it, but I do think it's one of the underappreciated parts of our game. I mean, you know, we've all had, you know, a dad or a parent or whatever we played sports with, but at a certain point in time, it comes hard to get up for a Sunday morning skate or go play pickup hoops, but there's something about this game. You could just do it forever.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, that's why we thought it was important. The three pillars of our campaign are physical, mental, and social. And that's why we really thought having the social aspect, bringing that aspect of why golf is so amazing to life through the campaign was important, because certainly where else, you know, when you get a little bit older in your life, are you going to find 5 hours to spend with your, you know, your kids or your loved ones, or, you know, just the opportunities that it creates to stay connected to friends and families is really unique, which certainly directly contributes to some of the mental benefits that are gained through playing the sport, but aren't limited to that from a mental benefit side. The concentration that is required in golf, you know, has been known to sort of reduce the symptoms of certain diseases like Alzheimer's. So there's all kinds of things that golf is providing just through your active engagement with the game that actually like also provide tangible mental benefits. Obviously the social aspect is probably the most notable one, and one that is one of the best benefits of it. But even just being outside for, you know, an extended period of time, there's great benefit in that, and is shown to reduce stress and anxiety. And so, you know, we think that any benefit you receive from the sport is something we want to encourage Canadians to think about. And it's just another reason to go out there and pick up a club.
It's funny, though, you know, we're talking about, I hear you say it reduces stress and anxiety. Tell me that the first time I scull a wedge across.
In the long run.
Fair. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but no, but honestly, talk a little bit more about the mental health side of it, because, you know, I'm a radio producer. I produce Real Kipper and Bourne. I do a lot of stuff while I'm on the golf course where there's moments where I get disconnected from the game, where I'm actually on my phone or whatever. But like throughout that, when you put the phone away, it is an amazing thing how little you think about the outside world and your problems and what you have going on in your life and what you have to do on the weekend or whatever you have to do. It is an amazing sort of unique opportunity to just go somewhere and not think about all the stuff that ails you and just kind of get out there and enjoy yourself. That's a huge part of it, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's the act of sort of really getting focused in, but also, you know, you inherently are going to be in beautiful surroundings, surrounded by nature, generally with people you enjoy spending time with. So all of those things combined, I think, are part of the reasons it's so beneficial to mental health. One of the other things I'll note that we've launched this year to help make it easier for people to track their progress is the Golf Canada app, which is the leading actually golf app in Canada, now has some golf and health features built into the platform itself. So you'll be able to track all of your steps. You'll be able to track elevation gain, calories burned. If you're wearing a wearable device, you'll be able to track your heart rate. So when you go and look back at the end of a golf season, you'll be able to see that you walked 70 kilometers or gained the elevation at equivalent of Mount Everest if you're playing some of those Stanley Thompson courses. So we're excited about making it a bit easier to track some of your health progress through the Golf Canada app this year too.
You were talking to two guys that are constantly working to convert people. Like, again, we won't name any names. There's lots of apps people use to keep their score, but the two of us are constantly making sure everybody knows about that app because we love it and we're big fans of it.
The,
go ahead, McKee.
The social aspect of that app has been great. Like, I chirp my buddies on there. I'm like, oh my God, what was that, shooter? Like, get it together. But having the ability to like and comment and add in the health benefit, like, I can't strongly recommend downloading the app enough. Paying I forget how much it is for the yearly subscription, but paying that, it's incredible. So yeah, I mean, you know how good the app is, but the improvements over the last couple of years have been phenomenal.
Yes, the app, it's great. Appreciate you saying that, and certainly that's our hope that it is adding value to golfers out there. The app's actually free to download. Obviously we do have a membership program that allows Golf Canada members to be able to do additional things like track their handicap and have instant protection, which is obviously comes with a membership fee, but the app itself is free to download and use, and a lot of those features are free to users.
Beautiful.
It's a good job to point that out, and you should download the app for free, even if you're not going to sign up. But you won't do it. I will. I'll chastise anyone listening to this podcast. Get yourself a Golf Canada membership.
Yeah.
It is a great thing. Help support the game in this country. And like you said, with the lost club return and the insurance portion of it as well, throw in the other stuff in the app. It is a it's a great program. I encourage everybody to get involved in it if you're a golfer in this country. As somebody whose job is chief marketing officer, I wonder how the idea of marketing the game of golf has changed. I mean, we obviously there's been a few kind of booms in the last 30 years of this, you know, Weir's win at the Masters, Tiger bursting on the scene. But then there was the pandemic boom. If that was one of the few activities that, you know, everybody could do safely, and we don't need to get into when they took it away from us, but we, you know, it did seem like it was a big boom during that time. How has the role of kind of marketing the game changed now that there has been this kind of explosion of players? Because I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I know during COVID it was a massive jump in terms of numbers played across the country and everything.
Yeah, we've seen a huge jump in terms of golf participation through COVID. Our scores posted are up roughly 40% versus pre-pandemic levels. So we're seeing just tremendous interest in the game, which is really great in terms of sitting in a seat trying to, you know, champion all of the amazing things that golf brings to Canada. And so in some ways it makes our job a little easier. Obviously, we're looking to bring new people into the game, try and, you know, ensure that the game feels accessible to people from different backgrounds ensure that we're working to bring, you know, more women to the game, which are now playing at increasingly higher numbers than pre-pandemic levels. So that stuff is really exciting. And then, you know, it's also really great for us when we've got such momentum happening at the professional level. The Canadians on tour are playing at levels of success that we really haven't seen before in terms of, you know, a whole host of players on the men's and women's side that are able to be out there competing for wins on a weekly basis. We saw Taylor Pendrith jump up and win an event a couple weeks ago. And obviously Nick Taylor's win last year at the RBC Canadian Open was sort of a signature iconic moment that, for at least from our perspective as marketers, we've tried to really lean into and make that core to the brand identity of what the RBC Canadian Open is all about, that sort of signature iconic Canadian moment in sports. So you notice that we updated the logo to reflect his putter flip, and we've been working hard to kind of celebrate that moment through content and through how we're promoting the event, and obviously, you know, work to do whatever we can to help, you know, celebrate that that iconic moment.
It's so funny. So you said two things there. Yeah, golfers, it's up 40% tee times posted. So I can blame you when I never get a tee time at Lakeview. Thanks a lot. I can't, you know, it's like getting a tee time at Augusta, trying to get at any city course in Toronto. It's like trying to get a tee time at Augusta. Secondly, I was going to kind of follow up on that. You know, you guys got the RBC Canadian Open coming up in Hamilton in a few weeks here. I'm sure it's just been such a dream for a market, like selling tickets, or just to have all these Canadian guys and having that winner last year, that it's just, these guys are all super capable of winning this baby, and you could see another moment like you saw last year. That's just got to be a dream for you guys.
Yeah, you know, after having Rory win like the two consecutive RBC Canadian Opens, obviously a bit of a gap through COVID between the 2019 win and the 2022 win. We were sort of, you can't draw up a better finish than 2022 with him coming down the stretch with Justin Thomas and Tony Finau and Rory playing lights out to win at St. George's in 2022. Then, lo and behold, last year at Oakdale, Nick comes up and hits a 72-foot putt. I mean, it's just you can't ask for something more special than that. And so in some ways, like, it's been a dream in terms of just carrying forward the momentum, which actually started long before Nick's signature moment. The event has just been on a rocket ship in terms of growth, both really by every measure, fans attending the event, corporate hospitality interest. You know, the growth of the event has been on this amazing trajectory. And so to have that support, you know, us as we look towards going back to Hamilton, which is one of the best venues that we host at in terms of it being obviously a top five venue in the country in terms of the golf course itself, but just all of the amazing things that we can build on that amazing footprint in Hamilton, it's really going to be something spectacular. And so, you know, having Nick as our defending champion, first time we've had a defending Canadian champion at the RBC Canadian Open in 69 years is just, I guess, the cherry on top in terms of building excitement for what's going to be an amazing event.
Man, you nailed it. I mean, I've been lucky enough to be kind of greenside at 18 for all three of those that you mentioned, the two Rory ones and the Taylor win. You know, I remember Rory winning at Hamilton the first time, and he's holding up a Raptors jersey because they're in the final, and
won't
thinking
be doing that this year.
Yeah, no, he won't. And I remember thinking, can't get any cooler than this. And then there was quite the scene on the 18th green with people rushing it and Rory winning. And I went, well, it definitely can't get any cooler than this. And then to see Taylor drop that bomb in the rain in front of, you know, all of Canadian golf and Weirzy's there. And it was incredible. I don't know how you're going to top it this year. And you mentioned the change of the logo there. I know you didn't do it for this reason, but you did just guarantee yourself some merch bought from this guy. Changing the logo.
Did I hear correctly that there's going to be an organ at the rink hole this year?
Yeah, that's one of the things we've done to try and level up things at the rink.
That's incredible.
So you guys know it's our hockey-themed hole. We got rink boards surrounding the entire par three. And so to add a little extra flavor this year, we've got an organist who's going to be playing some classic hockey themes.
That's as good as it gets.
Yeah, hopefully you'll hear some boisterous O Canada's belted out by the fans, who are obviously usually in a pretty good mood as the Canadians come through. So it's going to be quite the scene there at the rink hole.
It's hard to confirm anything in golf, but I can confirm we will be having some O Canada's. That much I can confirm. Tim, this is an awesome chat. Always love talking with anybody at the Golf Canada org. You guys are wonderful people. Hopefully we get a chance to run into you at the RBC Canadian Open in a couple weeks. Really, really appreciated the chat.
Thanks so much for having us on, guys. I'm looking forward to seeing you, if we don't talk before then, at Hamilton Golf and Country Club for the RBC Canadian Open.